This is James from the Control Listen podcast, brought to you by Octopart. I'm here with my co-host, Joseph Passmore. Today, we're here with Otto, CEO of DoublePoint. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Great to have you.
Thanks, James. Happy to be here.
Great. So just for anyone who doesn't know your company, who isn't familiar with your work, do you want to tell us a little bit about DoublePoint, what its goals are, what its story is?
Sure. DoublePoint is a gesture detection company founded in 2020. We started off when my CTO, my childhood friend, wanted to build this wristband for a personal tendency that he had. So he's actually trained in classical piano, and he built this tendency to type his thoughts in midair, essentially twitching his fingers like that, according to the 10-finger system. So whenever he would have a thought, you know, just subconsciously, he would just start, you know, twitching his fingers. And he wanted to build a wristband that could detect these different finger twitches and essentially act as a always-on keyboard that would log his thoughts, and he could return to them kind of whenever he wanted to. So this tendency basically took him to the lab, and he started prototyping with a few different sensors, and he built this wristband. And of course, there's not a market for people that subconsciously type their thoughts with their fingers. We've met maybe two people during this company's lifetime who have this similar tendency. So basically, just by accident, then we stumbled upon augmented reality control. And that's how the company got started. So then we started applying this gesture detection technology to AR input.
Why is touch so important to the future of interface technology?
So if we look at touch, it's very fundamental to humans. So basically, we know that we've left a mark on the world by the sense of touch. You know, if you imagine that you never felt what you kept in your hands or how you interacted with different objects, real objects around you, it would feel like a mirage. You saw, you know, the effect, but you wouldn't feel it. So ever since, you know, we can go to the caveman kind of times when we started using tools with our hands to really know that we've left a mark on the universe. And, you know, then of course in digital eras, we've seen mice, we've seen keyboards, we've seen touch screens, all of which do demand touch as a sense and also a form of input. I mean, it's we're not reinventing the wheel here. I think it's important today, and it will be important in the future as well. So DoublePoint is really in the business of taking touch as a sense into this kind of three-dimensional world. And that's to say, we don't do haptics, but instead we do the other side of touch, which is detecting touch.
Just for anyone who isn't familiar with the concepts of a micro gesture, what exactly does that mean?
So micro gesture is it's a subsection or subclass of gestures. So gestures, you know, we of course are very, very fundamental to humans as well. We've used gestures like thumbs up or lifting the middle finger up, you know, for ages to communicate with people around us, not through kind of verbal language or writing, but just using hand gestures. And of course, there are some cultures that do it more vividly than others. I come from Finland, and we're very discreet, so we don't use a lot of hand gestures unless you're kind of angry on the road. If you may, but for us, it's micro gestures is a kind of a way of gestures, which for us really means something that is comfortable to use. Mm-hmm. So something that you would see yourself doing for, you know, several minutes or hours each day. And for us, this micro gesture is something that is discreet. So it's not, doesn't intrude other people's kind of everyday life, as some larger gestures would, but then they would be enough to feel like you've done something, you feel like you've impacted whatever it is that you want to control. So for us, it's a matter of finding the perfect balance of this comfort and discreetness, but also impact. when it comes to micro gestures.
So it's something that you want to feel natural, essentially, to a person.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about intuition, like what intuitively feels nice to do, what feels good, and what feels zero learning curve to learn as well. It's we can't have something that takes ages to learn, because this ideally would be applicable to most, if not every human that's going to be using these technologies in the future. Right.
What are some of the possible applications of this technology as it advances?
So we kind of look back at the touchscreen as being a pivotal moment for kind of this new plethora of interfaces that started with the smartphone. So touchscreens in its current form were first introduced in smartphones. But now when you look around, you see touchscreens on your watch, you see them on your tablet, you see them in your car, you see them in the store counter, so you can sign your name and choose your tip. Yeah, exactly. So you've seen touchscreens go everywhere. And we think that, for very different reasons. In cars, one of the major reasons why we started seeing touchscreens is it's because it's cheaper than dials, these analog dials that you had previously. So so we see that gestures will see a similar type of adoption across, where we will see these kind of use cases branch out from augmented reality or virtual reality as we see today. Some of the ones we're very excited about is being able to interact with real objects in your surroundings. So maybe a car, maybe it's your light, so you can point at a light in your home and tap it on and then rotate the brightness. You may even point at your fridge when you want it to open, maybe in the future, and maybe you want to turn on your microwave. There's really no reason why we wouldn't be able to communicate something that's connected to the internet with gestures. It's really a matter of what feels natural for the human, and that's what we're here to enable, is this exploration into like how you can make these objects, virtual or real, part of your everyday environment, and use the same controlling mechanism to control everything instead of having different apps for each device that you have, or different remote controllers for each device that you have. So we think there's a kind of a universal way of inputting that is accomplishable here.
Do you think that what feels natural for humans will change as this technology advances?
So I think there something that we see is of course humans learn over time new methods, and the kids these days they learn things that are very difficult for some adults to pick up nowadays. So we see people being very kind of natural with new technologies in their young ages. And I think that will continue. Something that feels natural to us today may feel very old school for people coming a few decades after us. So there is a kind of progression that, is that we see happening. However, I think there are some principles that apply to the human nature on what is natural. And it's maybe not a neuroscientist, but a lot of it has to do with like how much delta there is to a previous mental model that you've seen. So if you need to learn, 100 new gestures, it's very difficult to build a mental model about that, which translates over time into other people's consciousness and understanding without having to go through years and years of training. And that's not what we want. So something that's easy to pick up, but then just kind of demands you to put it into a certain mental model that's already in you. And that we see is a key for the learnability of these new technologies.
You mentioned something before that I was actually curious about, which was virtual reality. and augmented reality side by side. I was wondering, is there any sort of way that they are going to overlap in the future technology-wise, or are they going to be sort of separate areas that go in, diverge in different directions?
So my mental model for thinking about virtual reality is like thinking about a PC. So a PC is something you have at your home, maybe at your workplace, to go about a session-specific use case or a target that you may have for something that you may want to do with your PC. So maybe you want to game at your home, or maybe you need it to run a sophisticated model that you've built for a car that you're designing at your workplace. But it's session specific. So the idea of virtual reality is that it's always, for me, it's something that you step into when you want to. And how I would compare augmented reality in this context is to a phone. So it's something that you don't necessarily step into as much, but it's something that is always on, always usable, and you use it for smaller amounts of time, but throughout the day. And we think that AR and VR kind of can operate in a similar way as phones and PCs work together today. So kind of there's some information exchange. You can open some of the same apps on each one. You can play some of the same games as well at times on each. But of course, there will be some tailoring always. So I would see like a similar setup happening, where some of the more intense, more immersive experiences you would do in virtual reality. But then AR is something that comes with you every day and kind of can add some crucial pieces of information when you go about your normal day. So we think that, or I think that they will be kind of highly interconnected, but kind of in a way where you may not even notice it.
Interesting.
Altium 365 lets you hold the fastest design reviews ever. Share your designs from anywhere and with anyone with a single click. It's easy. Leave a comment tagging your teammate and they'll instantly receive an email with a link to the design. Anyone you invite can open the design using a web browser. Using the browser interface, you're able to comment, mark up, cross-probe, inspect, and more. Comments are attached directly to the project, making them viewable within Altium Designer, as well as through the browser interface. Give it a try and get started with Altium 365 today.
Can you tell us about the developer smartwatch? What role is that playing in the development of this tech? And is it something you eventually plan to manufacture yourselves?
Yes. So if that's referring to the kit that we're building. So at Double Point, we've built the developer kit. And the need for this arose when we started to work on this kind of finger twitching kind of wristband. We actually stopped working on it pretty soon into the company's kind of story, because we found that actually a lot of the most important gestures that are key for this kind of intuitive interaction, you can detect with sensors that are already on the smartwatch. And mainly we refer to the IMU, including the accelerometer and the gyroscope, which can detect these kind of finger vibrations that occur when I do a particular intuitive gesture called the pinch. So then we basically built a app that can be founded on the Play Store for Android watches today, used by tens of thousands of people, that kind of you can make your watch into a Bluetooth mouse. And this kind of developer kit that we started building is to make it easier for clients to integrate our algorithms into their devices. So if you're looking into adding this into your product, you may ask, what's the battery life needed? What's the computation needed? At what sampling rate do you need to, you know, sample the sensors at? So this is very difficult to answer through an API that's provided in the watch. So we had to build our own platform to answer some of these questions. And this developer kit we're planning to distribute to companies that want to see what's the implication of technology like this into their products. and help answering some of these questions. So I feel like it's a very important vessel in the integration of these technologies into feature platforms.
Could you share any specific scenarios or use cases where the technology you're working on demonstrates advantages over traditional input methods?
Yes. So, of course, we need to define what is a traditional input method. Usually, we actually don't compete with... Well, okay, let's say voice. Voice is an input. So some of the very light kind of AR headsets that we see coming out today, they're voice first. And voice is, of course, it's great in some scenarios, but if you think about whether you would use Siri to control everything, it's a bit of a difficult task. Especially, I mean, we see it in Finland very well, where voice is kind of not necessarily a popular input method on its own, even between humans. So it's like it does make things kind of quite non-discreet. So you would need to be telling your password, you know, in the wild open. You would need to be, you know, sharing your private messages in the wild open. So there is something about being discreet, which is very key for the power of interaction. So in our in our case, we would, for example, compare with voice in a way where we are able to provide a more discreet way of interacting with your device, something that is unnoticeable by people around you, which is, of course, important in a lot of environments out there.
Why do you believe that wearables are so important, and what role will they play in our future?
So wearables, for us, they really signify a trend in computers not necessarily being distant and something we go and use, but rather something that can be kind of on us, can be worn, and they provide us key information about us and what we are sensing or what they are sensing, but that we're not picking up on our own. Maybe that's related to health. Maybe it's related to exercise. A lot of people today use wearables to maybe log an exercise. Maybe when they're jogging or playing tennis, maybe they use it to see how well they've slept, maybe how stressed they are, maybe if you should take a day off. So these technologies are very good at picking up things that we're not necessarily picking up ourselves. So the role of wearables for us is to really bring the most appropriate and the most relevant pieces of digital information into your everyday life without it staying too separate. So kind of wearable is just really a way of making this technology and your life more integrated.
I know this doesn't really apply to your company right now, but it does to the broader wearables market. What role do you see the global electronic supply chain having in, the development speed of wearable technology?
So we got started in 2020. And of course, we may remember the chip crisis when we saw some slowness in the logistics and the supply chains. That seriously affected a lot of companies, but it also affected us. So we were not able to prototype as quickly as lead times for very popular, pieces of equipment just went through the roof. The world's supply chain had kind of built itself to a zero warehouse strategy, where we were kind of not having anything in the warehouse, but rather just like making sure that that cycle is as quick as possible. And obviously, if there's any concern about whether that supply chain can stand itself, it becomes a problem, because a lot of money will be left on the table, a lot of innovation will end up not happening because we're waiting for parts. So for us, it has kind of changed our strategy as well. We kind of stockpile some key components ourselves today, even though we're just a small 13-person startup in Helsinki, Finland. So kind of, I'd imagine that if there's any type of interruptions in the future, which are similar in how they would impact kind of our ability to innovate, it will affect companies probably very badly if we see major disruptions. So this is something that, you know, we used to not be mindful of, but we need to be today in order to make sure that we're not seriously blocked by any kind of missing parts that we may need for our core technology.
And on a similar note, how do you see the legislations passed by the EU regarding ethical sourcing and like environmentally friendly manufacturing? How do you see that impacting things in the future in that space?
Yeah, so I think this legislation, I mean, coming from Finland, where a lot of things are kind of regulated, the government does play a big part in, you know, building the society here. I generally like the idea of legislation because it kind of gives a good push towards kind of a collective future where things are better, in a sense. So kind of anything, I'm not like intimately aware of the legislation myself and all the details related to it, but in a kind of a kind of big picture view, legislation which pushes us to also be better, we usually do, you know, we do accommodate with open arms. It's usually good. Of course, sometimes legislators have a tendency of, let's say, not listening to the people that their legislations may affect. So of course, that's something that we welcome as well, having this kind of bilateral conversation. But as a general rule of thumb, we would rather have some legislation than have none at all.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things, it's a trade-off where it makes your life slightly more difficult, but it makes the future of humanity that much more sustainable. So,
yeah, I think it's I mean, we hold a value system where it's definitely worth us doing that, especially since, not to get into geopolitics too much, but we've seen in Finland some heavy scrutiny over some of the kind of company sourcing parts to our eastern neighbor, under the kind of the which is Russia. So, I mean, if we had no legislation, people that would and companies that would be kind of seeking for profit, they would, you know, potentially kind of bite us in the ass, because it's, I mean, we have a military for a good reason. So it's not like we would be very, it would be dumb if we were sourcing a lot of critical military parts to our eastern neighbors right now. So, you know, in a lot of ways, it does play a crucial part in like how also security is here in Finland. So.
Are there any trends that you've noticed in the wearable space that you're excited about that you could share with us?
So personally, I quite like the idea of AI in wearables. So we've seen some AI companions. So a few different devices have been coming out lately where you can bring this kind of contextual information into your kind of everyday life. AI has a wonderful kind of, or the current AI methods, maybe language models, maybe image recognition models, they have a wonderful kind of way of searching through a lot of information, which is sometimes difficult for humans. So I find myself kind of in situations where I would benefit from this kind of database that would be available and kind of some pretty limited, but definitely some good analysis tools on that data that I'm seeing or that I'm experiencing. So personally, I'm quite excited about how AI is becoming more of a thing in kind of assistants or wearables, that I could be, you know, not only using through a prompt in my computer like ChatGPT, but rather something that's more readily available in my everyday life.
Fantastic. Well, that kind of brings us to the end of what we wanted to ask. But last question is, if people want to keep up with the company, check out your technology, see what you're doing, what are the best places to do that?
So we're quite active on LinkedIn and YouTube as a Double Point. And through our website, doublepoint.com, you can also find our Discord, where you can find people that are currently prototyping new interactions and new use cases for gestures. So if you want to see what people are actually coming up with, that's a great place to start. And then we share some of the top ones on our YouTube as well. Those places would be, you know, the best to start. If you have a Samsung Galaxy Watch or Google Watch, you can also try our free app that can be downloaded just from the Play Store. And the link to that can also be found on our website, doublepoint.com. So those I would start with.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. It's been really fascinating chatting with you.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And for anyone listening at home, come back next week and we will have another guest for you.